So those of you who are attentive will notice we're all decked out today. We've got pink altar cloth and flowers all over the place, and we've got this funky statue of the child Jesus. Okay, this is El Santo Niño, okay? And I don't recall which countries in Latin America love the Santo Niño, but did I ever mention that I used to live in the Philippines? The Santo Niño is really big in the Philippines, and there's actually a very beautiful story, so I do want to just kind of throw that out there, because today is the feast day. The Philippines was discovered by the West, at least. Obviously, the Filipinos knew they were there, but nobody in Europe knew that they existed. So the Philippines was discovered in the West by Ferdinand Magellan, right? And he's the first person who basically figured out how to get around the world. Interestingly enough, Magellan never made it around the world, but the rest of his group of ships did. So because of a political situation, in order to go to Asia, they weren't allowed to go east around Africa. So they went across the Atlantic and just guessed. They just said, if we keep sailing sooner or later, we've got to get our way around. They went around South America, went around Argentina, which apparently the roughest water in the entire world is on the southern tip of Argentina, because that's where the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans meet. You can imagine these poor guys facing that. They managed to get back up to Mexico. They fortunately discovered, nobody knew, but there's one of the sea currents that basically takes them straight to the Philippines, which is like, you know, conveyor belt. And they discovered the Philippines, okay? So when they were there, obviously there was kind of mixed political and religious motivations behind the voyage. So they were religious people. And Magellan apparently had gifted to one of the local tribal leaders a statue of the Santo Niño. Now, because the local tribal leaders didn't like the looks of the Europeans, they killed Ferdinand Magellan, so he never made it out of the Philippines. The rest of his convoy said, we better get out of here. They managed to sail back around, you know, went along India, came down along the coast of Africa, came back, and they made it as far as Portugal. Now what happened? No, they left originally from Spain. When they got to Portugal, the Portuguese stole everything. They stole their papers, they stole all their records, they stole everything, and sent them back with only the shirts on their backs to the King of Spain. And it wasn't until another 40 years later that two guys who were on the previous voyage, by sheer memory, Urdaneta and Legazpi led a new voyage of Spaniards all the way around South America. They figured out how to get back to the Philippines. And when they went back, they discovered that the people were worshiping that statue. Now, the Filipinos at that time were pagans. They worshiped all kinds of gods. But in the 40 years that they were gone, they figured out, when you pray to this guy, it works. Okay, now, to me, that's something very moving, because it says that, if you read the histories, the Spaniards, when they arrived and they saw that, they broke down and started weeping. Imagine. They risked their lives the entire way around the world. They risked their lives just crossing the Atlantic. Very few people had done it. They came down. Nobody had ever gone around the south of South America, the most dangerous waters in the world. They risked their lives crossing the Pacific. They got there. They had escaped after attack and everything. They waited 40 years. And they come back and they see that nonetheless, in a very primitive way, the gospel had already started to take root. Even if the people in the Philippines didn't really get it, Christ was already starting to do his thing. And when they showed up, they discovered that now the people were more receptive. And from that moment onward, there was a cultural exchange. Just like the Spaniards tended to have a cultural exchange with everywhere they went. And Christianity took root. To me, that's always been a very beautiful message. Now, 5 minutes into the homily, and we haven't even got to the homily. So, now for your homily. I'm going to call this homily A Tale of Three Verbs. It has nothing to do with the Santomino or Legaspi or any of those guys. But it does have to do with the gospel. So, A Tale of Three Verbs. Why that? Because when you read this gospel, there are three verbs, appropriately enough, that jump out. Jesus, it says, entered a village. Okay, first verb, entered. What's going on? Jesus is entering the town of Bethania. What's that in English? Bethany. Jesus is entering the town of Bethany, which is right on the outskirts of Jerusalem. It's like, you know, maybe 3-4 miles to the east, I guess it would be. Kind of on the way to Jericho. So if you're leaving Jerusalem, you kind of come up over the Mount of Olives. On the far side of the Mount of Olives is Bethany. Then you go out into the desert, go downhill, and you hit the Jordan River after about 25 miles. That's kind of the geography. So Jesus entered the village where a woman named Martha welcomed him, and she had a sister named Mary. When Jesus enters, here's the thing. Whenever you and I receive any good inspiration at all, we decide, it's been a long time since I've been to church, I'm going to go back. It's been a long time since I've been to confession, I'm going to go to confession. Or if you're already living the faith well, even throughout the day, regularly, you're going to receive lots of little inspirations to do good things. To do good, avoid evil, right? Avoid temptation and do the right thing. Sometimes we think we're doing God a favor. It's like, you know what? I've been away from God. I'm going to do something great for God. I'm going to do something. I'm going to go to Mass. Like I'm giving Jesus, doing Jesus some big favor by my presence in the church. You know what? Every single good inspiration that you ever have had or ever will have comes from God. He always is the one who takes the initiative. And when Jesus, in a certain sense, enters the village, what's he doing? Jesus is coming to the village. He's taking the initiative so that he can enter into this, have this encounter with Martha and Mary, and they don't mention, but also Lazarus lived there. Jesus is the one who comes to them. And Martha and Mary, because they are holy, they welcome him. It says, Martha welcomed him, and she had a sister named Mary, who sat beside the Lord, listening. Those are the three verbs. Enter, welcome, and listen. Okay? So what happens? Martha is a saint. She's one of the, there's actually like three people, Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. They're the only people that I can think of where it's like they are known in history as the friends of Jesus. How would you like having that for a little title? Hey, you know, I'm John the Baptist, or I'm, you know, I don't know who. I'm just Martha, besties with Jesus. Like, you know, when he wanted to come hang out, he came to our house. It's like the Noriegos, okay? The Noriegos. When Father Eric is looking for the plate, oh, there it is. Okay, it's kind of like being, it's a place where Jesus liked to go. Why did Jesus like to go there? It wasn't because of the cooking, despite what Martha thought. It's because he could just, well, he already had his hair down, but he could kind of figuratively let his hair down. They weren't always coming to him asking for miracles. They weren't always asking him, you know, setting things up, asking for favors, this or that. Please, Jesus, settle our disputes. They accepted him for who he was. They listened to him. He could simply be himself. And that's what he appreciated. Now, Martha and Mary have very different personalities. And Martha loved Jesus deeply. And it says when she welcomed Jesus, how does Martha know how to welcome? Well, she's one of those ladies that for her to welcome means everything has to be perfect. She's going to be cooking, she's going to be cleaning, she's got to set out 5 different courses, you know, hors d'oeuvres, charcuterie board, wine, you know, pasta dish, then this, then that, whatever. She's one of those ladies, she loves Christ, she wants to give him the best. And the best that she knows how to give is in service. There's actually a famous book that probably everybody should read. It's written by some Protestant pastor, I don't remember his name. Very good. It's called The Five Love Languages. By the way, if you're engaged, if anybody out there is engaged, just in case, get that book. Read the book. There are online tests you can do, okay? Just saying. If you're married and you haven't read the book, get the book. The five love languages, I don't even remember what they are off the top of my head, but basically the idea is this. According to the author, he says there's five basic ways that we will love. And he says the way that you choose to love is also the way that you want to be loved back. So, for example, if you're like Martha, clearly the way that you express love is through acts of service. You want to do stuff for people. And if you are a person who wants to do things for people, you also expect people to do things for you. That's how you feel like you are loved. Some people, their love language is giving gifts. Some people, it is words of affirmation. Some people, it is just spending time, hanging out. Okay? I forget what the last one is off the top of my head. So Martha loves Christ, but she loves him the way that she knows how to love him. And she loves on her terms. Now Jesus accepts that because he knows her heart. But then what happens is when she sees her sister Mary, who loves Jesus in a different way, she can't handle it. And she's thinking like, why are you so lazy? Here I am working, and you're just hanging out. Now, Jesus never said anything to Martha until, like we tend to do, Martha opened her big fat mouth and stuck her foot in it. Martha says, Lord, first of all, imagine this. Martha looks to Jesus, who is God, and basically accuses him and accuses her sister at the same time, accuses the whole world. Lord, do you not care, already accusation against Jesus, that my sister has left me by myself to do the serving? And then he tells her what to do, or she tells him what to do. Tell her, imagine telling God, all right, God, are you blind or what? Tell this guy, okay, that's basically what she's doing. Tell her to help me. At that moment, Jesus, who loves her very much and recognizes that she is a woman who loves, says to her, Martha, Martha, relax. He doesn't use that word. He says, you're anxious and worried about many things. There's need of only one thing. Relaxate, niña. Okay. Mary has chosen the better part, and it will not be taken from her. What did Mary do? When Jesus arrived to her house, it's not like Mary didn't care about serving Jesus, but Mary understood Jesus. She knew that Jesus was not there because he cared about their food. If he cared about their food, he would have found the local rich person and eaten at their house. Okay? Jesus, if he's going to their house, it's because he simply wants to be with them. This actually happens to me sometimes when I visit some of your houses. Sometimes people invite me over for whatever, and everyone's running around, get Father this, get Father that, and I'm like, honey, I don't care if you give me a hot dog and a piece of bread. If I'm here, it's not for your food. Really. And Mary got that. And why did Mary understand that? Because she listened. She was a woman who, first and foremost, was not trying to tell Jesus the way it should be. The first thing she did was listened to Christ. And when she listened to Christ, she understood his heart. And then she was able to give Christ a much more beautiful gift than what Martha did. Because imagine, for example, imagine if I was going to give one of you, I don't know, a brand new Jaguar, you know, some cool sports car. And I would at least expect that you would, like, be thankful, right? If I gave you, like, here's the keys to a brand new Jaguar, it's got like 1 mile on it, all the bells and whistles, everything, it's you know, the best thing that they make, and you're just like, hey, thanks. It's like, really? Okay. This is a little bit what Martha does. And Mary, because she was attuned to Christ's heart, knew how to give him back the gift. She, by valuing the gift that Jesus gave her, by valuing simply spending time with them, by listening to what he had to give them, she was valuing, and that made Christ happier than anything that somebody like Martha could give. So, how does this apply to us? Well, I'm going to let each one of you try to figure out how it applies to yourselves. But I will say this. If we want to grow in our relationship with Christ, if we find that we are the kind of people who like to tell Christ the way things should be, if we find ourselves complaining because I prayed and I didn't get what I wanted, I serve and I don't get recognized, I did this and whatever, we're probably, there's part of us that is trying to tell Christ the way things should be. And if we spent more time listening and being docile to him, then we would be more in tune with what Christ really wants for us. Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen.